coming from a social scientist perspective on development, from a critical one, I have to add as well. And by now we have discussed very technocratic ideas about development, which I do think is important to keep that in mind, but I also think it's to reflect on the broader context in which development is embedded. It's not a new concept, it was criticized, and I do think for the activity we have listened today, and we will probably get some more examples, it's also important to see the broader frame of the international development as it is taking place today. So I was asked to give an introduction into the MDGs, the Millennium Development Goals, and the SDGs. And I think it might be open space for interesting discussions where there could be connections to the examples we have heard today, or with regard to education, that's an issue which is very prominent anyway. So I will shortly talk about the MDGs, I will talk about the SDGs, and I would like to discuss in the end the question whether the Sustainable Development Goals or sustainable development can be a new development paradigm. And this might be also a way to discuss what space technology could really add to this. But as I said, space is for me, from a social science perspective, something completely different. Good. So just shortly about the Millennium Development Goals, I'm not sure if everybody is very familiar, I assume, from the World Bank, and you have worked with this for quite some time. So the Millennium Development Goals have been decided in 2000 and describe the focus and the task for international politics in the 21st century. And this was very new because before we had a huge number of actors who had different programs, strategies, and instruments. And it was, you know, a global attempt to develop something like a framework for international policies, which is, of course, also a result of the UN conferences. It was focusing with the aim to make aid more effective, focusing it more on poverty. And in 2000, the UN organizations, but also national governments, individually and collectively decided to strive towards the Millennium Development Goals. These are these goals. As you can see, we have heard already, education is, of course, one, but it's also child mortality. I mean, the issues which were and are still at stake. I would like to say one point to frame it to the point number 8, a global partnership for development. This was not decided immediately. This was a goal which was added some later because the countries in the south, and especially the G77, complained that the north was out, so to say, that their responsibilities were not fixed in the goals. I put strengths here in quotes because there is a discussion whether it's strengths or weaknesses, but I think the important points are that they have directed the world attention to the poorest again, that they have helped reverse the downward trend in official development assistance in the 1990s. And in the 1990s, the point was that we had a very critical scientific discourse on development under this term post-development, but on the other hand, we had also a lot of criticism concerning the outcomes of program and projects. So it was very difficult for a lot of actors actually also to legitimize that they are still investing money in development assistance and policy. They have a common framework, I said that already, a framework which provides countries to plan their social and economic development, and they have increased the accountability of the actors involved. And you mentioned that already, the positive outcomes. I will come to this later, but there are just ones which were always presented by in 2015, global poverty had decreased, child mortality had reduced, access to water had been increased, and also the education, the number of boys and girls going to school has rose, and in nearly to 91% in 2015. When we reflect on these outcomes, there is one point which I do think is the most important one, that progress has to be very uneven within, but also between countries. And the whole reduction of poverty is largely due to the overachievers in Asia. So it's actually China and Vietnam and India, which are responsible for the good picture, so to say, or for the good outcomes. By taking China out, actually the situation would look quite differently. Also on a national level, in many countries who have been economically successful, inequality has increased. And it turned out that even if we, and I think that's a point Justin made, even if education improves, it doesn't mean that it has impact on other goals, on other developments necessarily or automatically. Let's put it like this. The problem actually is that when we reflect what's the empirical scientific foundation of the progress which was reported, then it can be said that some country actually had much more ambitious national goals beforehand, which they adopted. So they could easily report progress, whereas others, like many African countries, were labeled failures, but they started at a much lower point. So it's a question, this same standards for everybody, for every country, of course, causes this kind of results. And further point is that what was measured actually, the measuring point was set in 1990, and not in 2000 when the Millennium Development Goals started. So the 1990s were much more successful, actually. We had other growth rate than we had in the year from 2000 onward. I just leave this, but what the available and historical data actually suggests that in none of the cases, or in none of the countries as well, there was an obvious sign of a faster progress since 2000 due to the Millennium Development Goals. So a lot of researchers, scientists actually argue that the same process could have been observed without having these new framework, and the main methodological problem is still the indicator for extreme poverty. This might be due to the fact, and this is something which also the SDGs face the problem currently, that the MDGs were not born with a plan, a budget, or a specific mapping of responsibilities, that the political will was missing, and also the coherence between policy fields. So therefore, I think it's actually nice, this example of the NASA and USAID, because this is some kind of cooperation which hardly takes place, but we need more coherence policies actually in this area. And one point which is for me at last very important, and I would like to remind you, especially the ones who are dealing with development, is that the MDGs have shaped the way how development was understood. It in a very reductionistic way, actually. The discussions about development and poverty reduction were much, I would say, innovative in the 90s when we were discussing social change, power relations, when Amartya Sen's concept was discussed. The MDGs is a kind of reversion to the 1980s thinking towards meeting basic needs again. And I do think when we talk about technology, we have to take this into account also, what kind of development are we talking about, since technocratic strategies dominated. I do think also this one size fits all goals and standards have to be critically evaluated, because other objectives do not have place, and also maybe other visions of development which do not fit into this frame. A point which I would also like to mention is how the measurement of development in inputs and outputs and not outcomes or impacts. And a little bit I understood your presentation in a way that it's also the quality, actually. I mean, it's, you know, if 90% of children go to school, we don't know what they actually learn. And in the statistic, you don't find the dropout rates. I mean, we know so many children start, but we don't know how many children leave school after 4 weeks or 2 years. So the Millennium Development Goals were much focusing on quantity and not so much on quality. And especially when we use technology, I think it's often the danger that the quantity is actually in focus and that we lose track what kind of quality, what is it really initiating, what is changing, has to be kept in mind. So, just to wrap it up, I think what Esther Hazy said in 2015 is a kind of summary I would sign. I mean, I know that not everybody would sign it, but at least he said that the MDGs gave far too much attention to middle-aged white male experts in the West debating what should be done for the rest of the world. So that is actually his conclusion of the Millennium Development Goals. And so we can discuss about that, how we find ourselves in this kind of quote. But I have put this here because I want to come now to the Sustainable Development Goals. And here it's important to say that the planning of the discussion of the Sustainable Development Goals, which were decided in 2015, a year ago now, there was another negotiation and consultation process. So there were much more actors involved, there were NGOs involved. I mean, you can find in the internet charts showing how the process was on national levels, what kind of actors have been involved. I think even individuals could have had, you know, typed what they think the sustainable development should be. It's also a result of the UN conferences. I do think it's a very ambitious project, which is based on the realization that the solution to the challenges of today can only be found through collective response. It's universal and integrated, and I do think that's the most important point. It means the goals apply to every nation and not just the so-called developing countries are now interconnected and they go beyond aid. It's not anymore about aid. The idea is to cover, in addition, economic, social, and environmental issues. And why we have this new phase or programmatic, it's important to mention that the world has changed. I mean, in between, we have a multipolar instead of a bipolar world. We have the BRICS as important development actors. I mean, if you think about the discussions in Busan, what kind of efforts were taken actually to get China in? There was where you can see that it got much more important. Development aid is still losing importance, at least rhetorically, the realization that there has been given too much attention to socioeconomic development and less to environmental sustainability. It's also global climate change as a global problem. I also do think that the discussion of Chomsky and other, of the limit of growth, the question whether we can still go on with this idea that growth is endless. I mean, that's actually the basic assumption of all the economic theories we had in the last decades. They were all assuming Marxism as well as that growth is endless, that we can always go forward. I do think when reading the SDGs, it turned out that it has been realized that the pattern of growth has put a number of essential Earth system services at risk, which of course will danger the livelihood of future generations, and we had in between the financial and the food crisis. And one point also is, of course, that the effects the impact of these changes got also obvious in the global north. It's not just something which happens in the global south. So the transformative shift is which you can read on all the UN sites concerning the SDGs, the Sustainable Development Goals. I just don't want to go into it, but you see it's leave no one behind, forge a global partnership, transform economies, inclusive growth, and this all was translated into these 70 goals, much more than in the Millennium Development Goals. And I think this chart shows it actually nicer. There are goals concerning nature. We have economic goals, we have societal goals, and the classical well-being ones, so to speak. So it's much broader, and it reflects more the idea that sustainable development is a combination of the economic, social, and the economic, social, and the ecological dimension have to be thought together. So we cannot have sustainability just focusing on the environment. Okay, just this. So when we reflect this, I think it was quite obvious that it's more comprehensive, this recognition that economic and social development is connected. The social dimensions are cast in a right-oriented way. I think that's very important in contrast to the MDGs. It's not like we're delivering certain services, but it's more that people have a right to education and people have the right to access to clean water and so on. Equality is targeted, and also this focus on sustainable production and consumption. And with consumption, of course, it's the responsibility of the North, which is, of course, included here. And it moves away from patronizing North-South dichotomy, means not focusing on the development countries exclusively. So, having said that, it's the SDGs are a challenge, the idea of development as a transfer of models or standards from North to South, and they present doubtless an ambitious global vision in contrast to the MDGs, and I think space can become an important point of this global vision, so to speak. Although it has to be said that, I mean, it's difficult to criticize because we are just in the first year, but there are some issues I still want to mention. What also, when I joined discussions and workshops about the SDGs, there was one last week on the SDGs and social entrepreneurship, the question which is always raised is that we have these goals, but nobody knows how to reach them. So it seems to be a kind of black box from the goals, I mean, from the decision of the goals to how to reach them. And we have 70 goals and 169 targets. And what I would like to present is this chart from the ODI, which I think is very nice because they have put it like this to show that it's only three goals actually which could be reached when reforming the current processes which are going on. So these are realistic targets to reach. They argue it's these three. The orange one would need a complete reversal of the current processes. I mean, completely the other way around, the development as we observe it today. And then they argue that the other nine ones would really need a revolution. So, I mean, we can discuss about that, but just to give you an idea, so what is written is really evolutionary. The question is actually how we get there. So we don't have to follow it, but I think it's nice to put it in this way. And additionally, there are, of course, goals which clash. I mean, the economic ones with, for example, sustainable production and consumption. So I do think, and I make this short now, but there are a lot of open questions, which of course also are important for cooperation, how different actors interact within this new frame. The first one is the political will. I mean, that's like with the MDGs, always the main challenge. The other one is who actually has this mandate on different levels? Who is going to take over the mandate for operationalizing on a national level in Austria, Germany, the states, wherever the sustainable development goals? And who sets the targets, actually? Because every country is supposed to set its own target. But what it says in the Sustainable Development Goals is that the target setting on a national level should be guided by the global level of ambition. So the question is, you know, who defines it on a national level and who sets what are the important targets for our country and how do the national and global targets then correspond? I mean, we have the national targets which each country is supposed to give itself, and then we have the global targets. And with regard to the implementation, I'm not a great believer in statistics and data and numbers, but I think just for the illustration, it's the UN estimates that 3.9 trillion, I even don't know how many zeros these are, will be needed per year, and they accounted that there will be around 1.4 trillion, which are going already in the relevant areas, which means that the annual investment must increase dramatically, and that's also where the private sector comes in, actually. But the question is, how can the private sector be motivated? This will be discussed tomorrow, but I think it's a very important question. Everybody talks about the private sector, but how can they be motivated and what does it actually mean also for the targets and for this, for operationalizing the whole project? And still, there is a lack of national and EU frameworks. I mean, we do come here from different countries. I have no idea how the ORS, I mean, I have an idea, but because I'm going to this event, but I have not really read an Austrian national framework with target set. It's not an issue which is high on the agenda. I mean, it's at the moment, like in Germany, it's the chancellor, actually, who took over and tries and takes the lead and tries to coordinate the other actors, but the primarily sit together and talk about responsibilities. I don't know, maybe somebody comes from a country where this has been further developed already, but it's of course a challenge of coherence, which is a general problem, not only in development policy. And also a EU framework is missing, at least was not there lately. Okay, then there are methodological questions. We have 169 priorities, 230 indicators. So there is, of course, a lot of possibility to cooperate. But the question is what this actually means, having so many indicators. The Sustainable Development Goals actually say it should be the local communities which should monitor the implementation of the SDGs. I don't know, in Austria, I'm not sure whether all our students know what the SDGs are. I'm not sure what is the public knowledge about this global framework. I mean, we normally communicate in communities where people know, and also how to connect the local community to the global level. Monitoring is another issue. At the moment, there's much talking about how to monitor and evaluate the process on national, global, regional, and thematic level. I read a number of 1 billion, which is said it will cost. So what we talk about currently is the technological questions of monitoring much more than the political aspects of the SDGs, and coming back and finishing with my last two slides. The point is whether, or the question I was raised in the beginning is whether the SDGs can become a new paradigm. Can sustainable development become the new paradigm? And as you rightly said, it's not a new concept. I mean, it's around for quite some time, but it got revived, so to speak, through the sustainable development agenda. I do think a space has been constructed for searching and development, developing a new economic paradigm. And what I think is really important to highlight is that it brought together people from all different areas, like politicians, officials, billionaires, NGOs, local activists, and so on. It's not new, as I said. It got revived, and I didn't even know that it's from the 19th century where the term was first mentioned, so thank you for this. I think there is a kind of realization that the rapid decrease in energy availability threatens the existing economic paradigm, and I also do think that there is much more thinking, which also gets reflected in the SDGs, about the belief in unlimited growth. The realization is also expressed in the SDGs that there is a need to bring together economic, social, and environmental development, and that the structural disruptions we have faced and we are still facing, and I also do think the increased mobility of people worldwide is kind of structural disruption as well, cannot be answered with old paradigms, with old models. So to say that we have to develop new strategy and models how to cope with, and that it's a universal challenge. But the question really is whether such a transformative agenda like the SDGs, at least on the conceptual level, matters at all. Because it doesn't really, or it's not defined which politics are needed to achieve sustainable development. The political will is not really obvious. I mean, of course, within the UN and development organizations, but not much beyond. And the current international political situation is not really promising. There is no moving from distrust towards mutual cooperation, no moving from naming symptoms to actions, and no going beyond naming threats to larger motivations. I do think that the classical visions of development, and these are often very technocratic and technological one, which I do think is part of it, but not all, will dominate despite the current crisis. So despite the new framework, I do think business as usual at least takes place at the moment. This might be changed. And actually, I could have showed you this kind of comic strip, because that's actually what I tried to explain you with many words now. And it can be done very easily with these three pictures, which express exactly what my intention was. So that's the literature, and thank you very much for your attention.